Everybody, good evening, and welcome to a special Motzai Shabbos edition of the Daf Yomi Shir. Today's Daf is Pesachim Daf Mem Gimel. First of all, I apologize in advance if the connection is a bit shaky. We're trying something new, so we'll see if it works. If it doesn't, my apologies. But anyway, so today's Daf is Pesachim Daf Mem Beis. We are going to Bez Hashem finish the second parak and begin the third parak of Maseches Pesachim. Today's shiur, and every shiur for as far as I can remember, is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. It is also sponsored by a lifelong Talmud of Rabbi Kelmer, Liz Chusser Fu Shalema, for Rabbi Kelmer Shlita Yehuda Ben Rivka Leia Yishavur Fu Shalema Besoch Shar Chole Yisrael. So we left off on the bottom of Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis at Tan Rabbanan, 8 lines from the end of the page. So the first thing we're going to talk about is whether there is an Isser Lo Saseh of eating a roasted carbon Pesach on Erev Pesach, and then the parak is going to finish off with a bit of a discussion about the last ingredient in matzah. We've spoken about the wheat and what types of grains you can use for matzah, and what to do to avoid chimutz when making matzah. But we're also going to talk about the water, whether there are any special requirements of the water that one uses specifically when it comes to matzah. And then, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to begin the third parak, where the Mishnah is going to talk about different types of chametz nuksha, whether it's chametz with tarovas chametz that do not involve an isser kares, but still involve an isser lo saseh. And the Gemara is going to have a list of things that are healthy for a person to eat, that are unhealthy for a person to eat. We're going to discuss a little bit about wine, how at a certain point in history, the wine that came from Yehuda was the most high-quality wine, that it would never turn sour naturally, and now the tables have turned after Churban Abayis, where now in Edom they produce such remarkable wine, but we no longer are able to produce such remarkable wine. And then we're going to have a stira, whether Rabbi Yehuda requires meiser on a temed, on a wine-flavored drink that involves mixing water with some grape products. So let's begin. We are holding again Daf Mem Aleph and Beis. Tan Rabbanan says Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Ochal Slimi Ba'odiyom Chayiv. If a person eats a roasted carbon Pesach on Erev Pesach, he's going to be Chayiv. Ukzayis No Mishachashecha Chayiv. Similarly, if a person eats a partially roasted carbon Pesach on the night of Pesach, when you're supposed to be eating carbon Pesach, but he's eating it No, which is the Lo Saseh in the Torah, he's going to be Chayiv. So we list these two halachos together. Eating a properly roasted karban at the improper time on Erev Pesach, or eating an improperly roasted karban at the proper time. And both of those are apparently chayiv. So katani tzli dum yadana. It says tzli and na, both of these isurim together. And therefore we can derive ma na belav, av tzli belav. If na is a lo saseh, if eating, which it is, it's clear in the Torah, if eating a partially cooked karban Pesach is a lo saseh, so eating a fully roasted karban Pesach on Erev Pesach must also be a lo saseh. But in order to say that something is a lo saseh, you need a pasuk. So where's the pasuk in the Torah that something is a lo saseh? So I'm reminded one of my talmidim told me that when he was taking a bechina with Rav Schechter and Rav Twersky once to apply for the masmidim program in yeshiva. So Rav Schechter kept asking him, that din, is that a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabanan? And he kept on guessing. He had no idea. So at some point, he was guessing din d'oraisa, and Rav Twersky interrupted, and he said, let me just give you some etzah. If you don't have a pasuk in mind, don't guess d'oraisa. Right? Meaning, in order to say that something's a lo saseh mi d'oraisa, you need a pasuk. So where is the pasuk that says that ochal tzli mi bod yom is going to be chayiv? So says Mar Bishlam, and no, I understand very well that it says that no is a lo saseh tid partially cook on Pesach night, ksiv al tochlu mi menu na. It's a beferish a pasuk. Al tochlu menu na elat sli mi nolan. But how do I know that sli is a lo saseh? So dichsev vachlas a basar balayla zeh, because the pasuk says you're supposed to eat a properly roasted carbon Pesach at night. So we could derive from there balayla in biyom lo, that it's dafka at night that you're supposed to eat it, but not during the day. So says Gemara, but wait a second, that's not a lo saseh. Hay lava ba mechal asehu. That's what you're not allowed to do, being derived from the Torah telling me what you ought to do. So the Torah tells me you're supposed
supposed to eat it on Pesach night, and I'm deriving from there not to eat it on Erev Pesach. But the rule is, v'kol lav haba mechal asei, asei, that anything that's only a lav haba mechal asei is not a los asei. You wouldn't be chayv malkus for a lav haba mechal asei. It has the status of a mitzvah asei. So answers the Gemara, Amrav Chista, Hamani, Rabbi Yehudahi. Einochinami, you're right. It's a lav haba mechal asei. It would seem to be a lav haba mechal asei. It should not be a los asei. But there is one Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that everything in this parsha is a los asei, even that which can only be derived al yedei lav haba mechal asei. Why? Where does Rabbi Yehuda get this idea? Because at the beginning of the parsha, the Torah says, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemar," and from the word lemar, Rabbi Yehuda derives whenever a parsha begins with the word lemar, that means that it's a los asei. The Tanya, because the Brisa tells us in a different context when it talks about if you want to be makdish an animal for the Beis Hamikdash, so it says shor vaseh sarua vekolut. If the animal is a balmum nidava ta'aseh, so then you have to make sure that it's only hukdash lebedek habayis, but it cannot be for a korban. It doesn't have kedushas mizbeach, only kedushas bedek habayis, because it's an animal that's a balmum. But we darshan from there, oso atamatvis lebedek habayis, but the e atamatvis tmim lebedek habayis. If you have an animal that's not a balmum, then you're not allowed to dedicate that to bedek habayis. Meaning an animal that's eligible to be on the mizbeach, and you want to be makdish it le mizbeach. Don't be makdish it for bedek habayis. So we darshan, you're not allowed to be makdish an animal that's not a balmum for bedek habayis. That's got to be for kedushas mizbeach. So mikan amru kol amatvis tamim lebedek habayis over basay. So we see from here that if you're makdish a tamim for a bedek habayis, it's a violation of a mitzvah sasei. Ein li ela basay below sasei minayin. Yeah, I see that it's a violation of a mitzvah sasei. But how do I know that it's also a lo sasei? Pashtus is it's not a lo sasei, right? It sounds like it's a lava b'mechlal asei. So tamalomer vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, that at the beginning of that parsha, Vayikra Chav Beis Pasuk Yud Zayin Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Leimor Limed Al Kol HaParsha Kulo Sheyeh Belos HaSeidiv Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says whenever it starts with the word Leimor, that's Melamed that the entire parsha is really Belos HaSei. So Amar Rabbi Lebar Kapara, my mashma, how does the word Leimor imply Los HaSei? It's a funny word, Leimor, right? Being it doesn't translate well into English. What are you going to say? That I spoke to my wife saying, of course, if I spoke to her, I was saying, it doesn't work well in English. So normally we assume that with the word, a lot of times you have like that in the Torah, that the Torah has a word that seems, when you translate it, it seems to be totally extra. I just gave a drasha today that the pasuk says in this morning's parasha. They tell Yosef, Eimel Yosef, Hinei avicha chola, behold, your father is sick. What would have been lost if they would have said avicha chola? Your father is sick, right? Have you ever, in your entire life, heard anyone use the word "behold" other than in a translation of the Bible, right? It doesn't. No one uses that. There must be a meaning to it, right? So that's what the Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes in Derech Sicha, that the word "hineh" means that it's a surprise, that it's shocking, that it's what was unexpected. That's how Chazal knew that no one was ever sick before Yaakov. Why is it so surprising that a man well into his hundreds is sick, right? Because no one else ever got sick. Hinei avicha chola. So what does the word lemor mean? What does the word lemor come teach me? So typically, Chazal darshan that lemor really means lemor la'acherim, which is a source for the concept of confidentiality. You know, we know that legally sometimes that there's confidentiality in certain relationships, a doctor-patient, a lawyer, you know, an attorney and his client. Rabbinic confidentiality is somewhat of an interesting topic that went to the Supreme Court a while back. So a very interesting topic. But what do we assume in halacha? So Lemor means lemor la'acherim. That implies that if it's not lemor la'acherim, it's meant for you. That when I'm telling you something, then it's for your ears, unless you have explicit permission, lemor la'acherim, to go tell it to other people. So but over here the Gemara is telling us that lemor implies a lo sase. That not only does it say lemor la'acherim, it implies that there's a lo sase. How does it imply a lo sase? Says the Gemara, amar lo d'chsiv lemor lo ne'amar bedvarim. Be'rav amri, lemor lav amur, that it's like an atrikun of two words, that lemar is that there's a low amar, that we're saying a low sasei in everything that follows in the parsha. So if what follows in the parsha is that you're not allowed to take an animal that is a tamim, that has no mum, and be makdishit lebedek habayis, that means that's a lo sasei. And if what follows in the parsha is that you're not allowed to take a perfectly good roasted carbon pesach and eat it on erev pesach, then that's a lo sasei. And that's why we started off with this brisa that says that you're chayiv on eating a roasted carbon pesach and erev pesach the same way that you're chayiv for eating a partially roasted carbon pesach on the night of pesach, that they're both a lo sasei. They're both a violation of lo sasei. That's within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that the word lemor teaches me lo sasei. Says the Gemara further now, mei tashmisho shel nachtom, that if you have the water that a baker uses, so if you recall back in the Mishnah on the bottom of Memam Beis, we had said that mei tashmisho shel nachtom yishpuchu mipnei shein machmitzin. You have to spill it out because it creates pieces of chametz that appear in that water that someone who's baking will wash off their hands, will rinse off their hands, so there will be pieces of chametz there. So Tani Chada, Shovchin b'makom madron, that you dafka spill it out on a place that's on a slant a little bit, so that it will drain away. Ve'ein shovchin b'makom ishporin, but don't spill it out in a place where it's going to stand still. V'tanya idach, and another brisa tells us shovchin b'makom ishporin, that you could spill it out in a place of ishporin, in a place where it stands still. So which is it? Are you or are you not allowed to spill it out in a place that it stands still? Do you have to? Do you have to dafka spill it out on a place that's on a slant? So says Gemara, lo kasha. Hadu nefishi de kavu, hadu lo nefishi de lo kavu. It's not a stira. It's a question of how much do you have? If it's a lot of water, you're gonna pour it onto the ground, it will make a puddle. That's a problem. If it's going to stand still, then you'll have chametz there. If it's not so much water, it will get absorbed into the ground and the rest will spill away. You're not going to have anything there, and then it won't make chametz there. You have to assess the situation based on the quantity that you have. Now, says Gemara, new halacha. Amar Rav Yehuda, isha lo talush ela b'mayim shalanu. I assume this applies to an ish as well. I guess the assumption is that it was most common for women to be the ones to knead the dough for the baking of the matzah. But it says an isha, a woman, should not knead the dough with any water other than mayim shalanu. Meaning we've already had our conversation about the flour, what kind of grains the flour has to come from, and what kind of flour it has to be or doesn't have to be. Now we're going to talk about the water, that there are actually halachas about the water. So Rabbi Yehuda said this somewhat cryptic phrase, that you can only use mayim shalanu. So the word lun in Hebrew means to be left overnight, like lo salin nivlasa ala eitz, to leave a dead body overnight is a violation of a lo sase min haTorah. It's certainly by Aruge Bezdin, but the Rishonim extend that to the Gemara already extends it, I think, to other mesim as well. That's lun, to be lun, to be left over overnight. But the word shalanu also means hours. So it was unclear when he expressed it. Rabbi Yehuda said that you can only use mayim shalanu. So darsha Rav Masna bepapunya. So Rav Masna went and he spread the word that, oh, you should know, big psak for Rabbi Yehuda. You're only allowed to use mayim shalanu. So what happened? Lamachar isukuli al machatzbayu v'asul gabei varm lehavlan maya. Everyone came with their pails and they said, and they came knocking on Rabbi Yehuda's door and said, can you give us some water? We need to use mayim shalanu. We need to use your water. You said everyone can only use our water. So everyone took him at his word and said, okay, we'll use your water. Now give a supply of some water. No, I should have said it in Aramaic. Then maybe it wouldn't have been so confusing. I didn't mean our water. I meant water that's left overnight. The assumption is that water that's taken fresh from the ground, at least during certain times of the year, after the winter time, the Gemara later in Pesachim Daf Tzadi Dalit is going to tell us the assumption is that there's a natural heat to that water. And when you use warm water, there's a much greater risk of chimutz. So he was saying, no, what I really meant to say is that you have to leave the water, you have to draw the water, then keep it overnight so that it can cool down appropriately, and then use it for matzah. Because if you were to try to use it for matzah when you have just drawn that water that day, then it's going to be a problem of a chashash chimutz because of the warmth of that water. I don't really understand fully why the Gemara has to tell us about this misunderstanding that he said mayim shalanu, and that everyone it sounds like a chelm story that everyone said, oh, we have to use your water. Like, I'm not sure what exactly the Gemara is trying to express, although it does remind me a little bit of the Gemara at the beginning of Masech Sanhedrin, when the Gemara describes the reason that we have a concept of heter hora'a. Why is it that people need not real smicha? Smicha we don't have anymore. Smicha is has to be Ish Mi Piyish for Moshe Rabbeinu, and that entitles a person to serve on a Sanhedrin that will give Malkus and Mises Beis Din and Dine Knossos. So there's a whole Madrega that we don't have anymore. The program that I'm involved with in Yeshiva University is really a Heter Hora'a program, but that doesn't roll off the tongue nicely, so we call it a Smicha program. But really what we do, what we call Smicha nowadays, is Heter Hora'a. It's the right to Paskin Alachos. So what do you need in order to be able to Paskin Alachos? So I would have said the first thing you need is knowledge. You need to know the halacha, otherwise you can't paskin halacha, and that's probably where hetera came from. The Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin tells us, no, that's obvious, of course. No one would ever paskin halacha without knowing the halacha. That's not a chiddush. The reason they instituted hetera was because of a maisa shahaya. Why do you need permission from your Rebbe to paskin before you can paskin? Because of maisa shahaya. There was a story that happened where someone had come to a town and he told everyone that may beitzim are not machshir lekabel tumah. That if you have like egg whites, they're not one of the Zion Mashkim, and therefore they're not going to be Machshir food to be Makabal Tumah. And then another rabbi came to town a while later, and he saw that everyone was working with the assumption that May Bitsaim, that swamp water, is not Machshir Lekabal Tumah. And they were doing everything Bitumah, because they were just using swamp water, and their peros were in contact with swamp water, and then with Shratzim, and that didn't bother them. And Hafrash Haschala was all Tameh, everything was Tameh, because they were using swamp water, and they assumed, it's not Machshir Lekabal Tumah anyway. So the Rav who came and visited said, what are you guys doing? They have like dangling shratzim everywhere. What are you guys doing? How can you be metame all your food? They said, no, great Talmud Chacham came to visit, and he told us that May Beitzim, that May Bitsayim are not Machshir Lekabal Tumah. So the Gemara says, no, Ihu May Beitzim Ka'amar, and they just didn't hear it right. He didn't communicate it clearly. The speaker who said the halacha, he knew the halacha. He didn't know how to communicate the halacha clearly. And he didn't check for understanding, that people knew what he was talking about. And that's why they instituted Heter Hora'a, to make sure that not only that he knows the halacha, but that people will be able to understand when he says the halacha. So if that's the case, you understand a little bit why the Gemara might want to emphasize how important it is to be clear in the choice of terminology that a posik is going to use when paskin halacha. You're going to say mayim shalanu, that's going to be a big problem if people aren't going to understand that properly. So that's why the Gemara, maybe that's why the Gemara is telling us that, you know, I should have used a better word. I should have used the b'maya debisu. It's reminiscent also of the Mishnah Maseches Idios. The Mishnah Maseches Idios talks about how much water apostles a mikvah, mayim shuvim. So at some point he uses the term malei hin mayim. And the Mishnah itself tells us, you know, a hin is a measurement. So just say hin mayim. Why does it have to say malei hin mayim? A hin is a full hin, obviously. Why does it have to say malei hin? So that's what the Mishnah says, that that Shmai and Avtalion were the originators of that teaching, and they were Gerim, and as Gerim they had trouble pronouncing the Hebrew letter He. So when they said hin, it came out as in, and no one understood what they were talking about. So they compensated for the lack of clarity that resulted from their speech impediment by adding an extra word so that you could figure out from context what they meant. So they said malei hin, and then in later generations when their Talmidim would say over their teachings, they would also say malehin, even though the Talmidim knew how to pronounce the word, because chayav adam lomar b'lashon rabo. But maybe that's what the Gemara is highlighting over here, the necessity of being clear in terms of paskening halacha, otherwise people can get the whole thing wrong. So anyway, weiter in the Gemara, darish rava, isha lo tolish bechama, on a similar halacha, a woman is not supposed to knead the dough for matzah in the sun, because it gets hot, and the warmth will create a chashash chimutz, v'lo bechame chama, nor with water that was heated by the sun, nor from water that came from a kettle, a large copper kettle that retains heat very well. It's like a thermos. Even if the fire has been off for a while, we assume the heat is still very strong. And she shouldn't stop working with the bread until the matzahs are baked, meaning she should be osake in the dough the whole time, because the more the dough is being aggravated and moved and dealt with, that prevents chimutz from happening. And she needs two kelim, one to smear the dough with the water on the outside, and one to cool down her hands, so that because of the heat generated just by the energy of her hands, could also be machmit. So yibayiluhu. We have all these halachos now about avoiding warmth when making matzah. So avra v'lasha mahu. What if she actually needed the dough with some of this warmth? Now is it going to be usher to eat? Do we assume that chametz actually happen, or is this just a chashash l'chadchila? Don't do it this way, lest it become chametz. So Marzutra amar mutter, Ravashi amar asr. Marzutra said it's mutter, the food is going to be mutter, the matzah is going to be mutter. Ravashi says the matzah is going to be asr. So Marzutra mina aminala, how do I know that it's going to be mutter? He says, I know it from the sugya we had back on Daf Mem, the sugya of lesisa. Remember, we had the sugya about soaking the grain before grinding it. So they had four different shittos about whether you're allowed to do lesisa. How could you have four different shittos? Either yes or no. So, well, one shita said, it depends who you are, how zahir you are. Then you could do lesisa if you're a person who's very zahir. We had another shita that said, no, asr lilsos. Another shita that says, mutter lilsos. We even had a shita, Rava says, mitzvah lilsos. But in that sugya of lesisa, one of the things that we mentioned was that the Braisa tells us, D'tanya ein losis in hasa'orin bePesach, that you shouldn't soak the barley on Pesach, v'im losas, and if you did soak it, nisbaku asurim, lo nisbaku mutarin. If there was a crack that developed in the barley, then it becomes asur, but if it did not crack, then it's going to be mutter. So you see that we say that it's mutter if it didn't crack. If you don't see a problem, you don't see chimutz, then even though you didn't do things exactly correctly, it's mutter. So says Marzutra, I would say the same thing about warm water. You're not supposed to use warm water, it's wrong, but if you did it and you don't see any chimutz happening, so it's mutter. Ravashi Amar, Ravashi says, nah, atu kulu chadu mechitza mechtinu, heichad itmar itmar, heichad lo itmar lo itmar. You can't prove that it's mutter just because in the case of lesisa, it was mutter. Not every halacha that involves a chashash chimutz is the same halacha. Meaning, maybe when the chashash chimutz is a result of lesisa, we're not so concerned about chimutz to the extent that we'll say it's mutter b'diavet. But maybe when the chashash chimutz is a result of something like warm water, maybe we're more choshish for chimutz, and maybe even b'diavet, it's going to be asur. So that's not a raya one way or the other. Hadron alach kol sha'a. That is the end of the second parak of Maseches Pesachim. So now we move on to the third perek, as the Gabbai in our shul announced today. If you're using Art Scroll, new volume. I'll add, if you're using Masifta, new volume. So we now move on to the, if you're using old-fashioned Gemara, you're good for the next several months. So now we move on to the third perek of Maseches Pesachim. So the Mishnah is going to talk about types of chametz that are asur on Pesach, even though they're not chametz gomur. It's a tarovis of chametz gomur, or it's chametz nuksha, which means chametz that's not really ra'ui la'achila, and we're going to discuss what the isurim associated with such chametz is. So says Mar ve'e, or what the isurim are. Ve'elu ovrim bepesach. We'll translate this line like Rashi at first. The following things are a violation of bal yirah bal yimatzeh to own on Pesach. And they are kutach habavli. The Gemara is going to elaborate on what each of these things are, but I'll already give it away now. Kutach habavli is a type of food that they made in Bavel, which was really a dip. It was not eaten straight. It was something that you would dip into, and it was made with salt and with whey, with the leftover milk product after cheese making, and with some old stale bread. And it doesn't sound so delicious to us, but apparently this was a delicious dip that people would eat. This kutach dip comes up in a couple of places in Shas. It comes up in a context of chametz, like over here, because one of the ingredients was old bread. It also comes up in Maseches Chulin in the Basar B'chalav Sugyas, because one of the ingredients is a milk product, right? So that's the those are the two places that it really comes up. So kutach habavli, v'shechar amadi, beer that they make, that's the muddy beer that they would put barley water in. V'chometz ha'adomi, and the third product is vinegar that they make in Edom, where they put barley into the wine in order to make it machmitz, in order to turn it into vinegar. V'zeisom ha'mitzri, and another type of drink that was taken for therapeutic reasons, for a refuah called Zesum HaMitzri. Those four products, those are all Chametz Nuksha, and then we have another three items. Vizoman Shal Tzaba'im, the water that they would put some bran in, and they would use it for dyeing hides. Va'amelin Shal Tabachim, or they would sometimes make bread with grain that was not fully ripened, not because they wanted to eat the bread, but that a chef would put this bread on top of a dish, and it would draw out all the impurities of the dish. It was like a vacuum cleaner to draw out the impurities of the dish. V'kolon shel sofrim, or a glue that was used by sofrim, by, let's assume for now, we'll see at the end of the daf, shoemakers, that they would use this type of glue. So these products all had chametz in them. Reb Lazar Omer, aftach shita,
tachshitei nashim. And then Rabbi Elazar added, even tachshitei nashim, that which women would use for hair removal, a beauty product that women would use. Zaklal, kol shumi min dagan, hareza over bepesach. Anything that's a min dagan that has grain in it, and we define grain back on daf lamed hey, chameshes mine dagan, not orez, not dochen, chameshes mine dagan, anything that's made out of chita, sa'ara, kusmin, shibol, shul, v'shifon, is going to be a violation on Pesach about Yerabai Matzah to own it. Hare ilu bazhara, vein b'mishum kares. But it's only a low saseh, and it is not kares. That is the way Rashi understands, that elu over means that elu over on bal yira'a bal yimatzeh. The riva writes a little bit differently. Tosus quotes a riva, that elu over means not over as in you violated, like you're over in Isser, but over means get rid of it. Elu over, the following things you need to remove, you need to get rid of, which is really saying the same thing as Rashi in terms of halacha. It means you can't own it, you got to get rid of it. But it's just a different way of understanding how we arrive at that, what the word ovrin means. Totally different from Rashi and the Riva is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, Elu ovrin means that if you eat these things, you violate the Yisra of achilas chametz, not an issur to own chametz, to get rid of these things, bal yira bal yimatzeh. No, elu ovrin means that you violate the issur of achilas chametz. You got to get it off your table because it's usher to eat it. So the raya to Rabbeinu Tam, and really raya against Rashi, is the end of the Mishnah, because the end of the Mishnah says, and you know, it's only that you're over, but there's no kares. Well, if it was about owning chametz, of course there's no kares. There's no kares for owning chametz ever. Why would you think that there would be kares? So rather, says Rabbeinu Tam, it's about achila, and we're saying there's no kares over here as opposed to chametz gamur, which would have an iser kares if you were to eat chametz gamur. Now, another quick point over here, Rabbi Kiva Eger points out that one might have said that the chachamim asr chametz nuksha is only chametz midrabanan, maybe it's only asr mechatzos hayom on Erev Pesach, meaning beginning from the sixth hour, because then chametz gomer is asr min haTorah. So they were gozer on chametz nuksha atu chametz gomer. But maybe in the fifth hour, where chametz gomer is only asr midrabanan, maybe they were never gozer on chametz nuksha. Maybe in the fifth hour, you know, we have a principle ein gozerin gzeira legzeira, that when the rabbanan don't make a double gzeira. So on the one hand, they make a gzeira that chametz nuksha is asr. Then they're going to make another gzeira on top of that, that not only is chametz nuksha going to be asr, but chametz nuksha is going to be asr in the fifth hour. That's only a din d'raban on the fifth hour. Same goes in gzeira l'gzeira. That's what Rabbi Kiva Eger said he would want to believe. The problem is he has a raya from Tosos in a couple of places, not that way. That Tosos assumes that even chametz nuksha becomes aser at the same time as chametz gomer. Tosos in Maseches Chulin implies this way, and Dav Dalid. Tosos in Maseches Kiddushin. So what do you do about ain goes in gzeira l'gzeira? So you have to say is that no, this isn't a gzeira l'gzeira. The Rabbanan made two separate gzeiros, and they happen to convert in this spot, but these gezeros are unrelated to each other. You have one gezera that expands the zman of the Yisra of Chametz an hour earlier from Chatzos, that even the fifth hour, and then you have an additional gezera that expands the definition of Chametz, that Chametz includes Chametz Nuksha as well. It happens to be that when you're dealing with the expanded definition of Chametz during the expanded hours, you have what's called a Trei Derabanan. That is not the same as gezera l'gzera. Gzera l'gzera would be if the Chachamim made a gzera that chametz nuksha is aser, and then they made a gzera that you're not allowed to eat something else, like peros, let's say, lest you come to eat chametz nuksha. That would be a gzera l'gzera, where the whole second gzera was only to prevent you from doing the first gzera. So that's the comment, that's probably the way to explain the maskan of Rabbi Kiva Eger, that the Isser already begins before Sheish Sha'os on Erev Pesach. So let's see the Gemara now. The Gemara is going to give us some health tips. There are three things that we can say about Kutach HaBavli. Number one, metamte mesalev. It causes a person timtum alev. Timtum alev is a terminology that we use. It's not a health condition. It doesn't mean that that a person is going to have like clogged arteries or something like that. Timtum alev means that a person is not going to be able to absorb chachma properly. It's some sort of spiritual deficiency that we normally associate with eating non-kosher food. That's what the poskim talk about. If a person eats non-kosher food, in addition to the Isser of Machalos Asuros, sometimes he doesn't have the Isser of Machalos Asuros. He's a Chola, or he's an Anus. He didn't do anything wrong. But there's still a concern of Timtum Alev. If you recall, years ago, one of the major kashrut scandals where there was a very reliable, or everyone thought reliable, kosher butcher that was selling non-kosher chicken. So there was big discussion about kashering the kelim and whether people had to kasher their kelim in that community. And but Rabbi Yaakov Luban from the OU at the time published an article in the Masorah Journal about Timtum Alev. Like, forget about the, not forget about, but even if there's no technical kashrus problem, do you have to worry about Timtum Alev? Because that's the assumption, that Timtum Alev is some sort of, it creates some sort of spiritual shortcoming. That's why we don't even give little tiny children non-kosher food, even when they're babies and they're not at the age of chinuch yet. We don't give them non-kosher food because there's a concern of Timtum Alev. So Kuta Chabavli is metamtem es Alev. It prevents a certain level of chachma. So the umesame es heinayim, it also blinds the eyes. Umachish es aguf, and a weak the body in general. So these are the three side effects of eating kuta chabavli. So the Gemara explains what each of the side effects is attributable to. There are three ingredients. So each ingredient causes one of these side effects. Metamte mesalev mishum nisuvei dechalva. It's metamte the lev because of the milk product in there, that's in there, the whey that's in there. Or mesame seinayim mishum milcha. It blinds the eye because of salt. We've seen that salt blinds the eye. That was back in Maseches Brachos. So we spoke about mayim achron. That mayim achronim is necessary because of melech sedomis, that one requires that if one touches melech sedomis and then they rub their eye, it's mesame yaseinayim, it could blind the person's eyes. So that's mishum milcha, and machish asaguv mishum kominisu du'uma, and it weakens the body because of the stale bread that's in the kutach. Tan rabban shlosh dvarim mar bin azevel. There are three things that will cause a person to have to use the bathroom a lot more. The kofen asakom, and will cause a person to stand up straight. That it will cause him to be bent over, to be hunched over, meaning it will sap him of his strength. And it will weaken his eyesight, one 500th of his eyesight. And these are the three items that cause these three side effects. Ve'eluhein pas kibar, you have bread made from very coarse flour. V'sheichar chadash, you have new beer. V'yarak chai, and you have raw vegetables. Tan Rabbanan, we have another brisa. Shlosh dvar mimatin es hazavel v'zogfin es hakomo me'irin es einayim. There are three products that, if you eat them, they have the opposite effects on a person. Three very positive effects on a person that it will cause a person not to have stomach problems and go to the bathroom all the time. It will cause a person to stand up straight, and it will cause a person to see very clearly. And those are ve'elein pas nekia basar shamein v'yayin yashan. Clean bread, meaning bread made with. We'll see what the definition of each of these things are right now. Pas nekia, what is the definition of pas nekia? Disamida, which Rashi says soles, they use with very fine flour. Basar shamein, it's a fear to delo ivtach. Basar shamein means that it's basar of a goat, Rashi says, a female goat that had never had a baby yet. So it has apparently very soft and delicious meat. Other Rishonim say, no, ditzafirta? Tzafirta has to be tzipar, right? It has to be a bird. It's got to be some type of fatty bird. Whatever it is. And yayin yashan is atikatike, is three-year-old wine. Kalmili demali lahai kashalai dekashalai mali lahai. Says Gemara, let me give you a health tip over here. Sometimes people will tell you, if you eat this, oh, this is really great for heart health. If it's really great for heart health, probably in too much quantity, it's bad for something else. Very often, it's important for a person to have a balanced diet. Sometimes you'll see these gimmick diets. If you eat no carbs, you eat only protein for the rest of your life, so you'll probably die. I mean, if you eat only carbs for the rest of your life, you know, they'll tell you, like, you can, miracles. A balanced diet is what a person, that which is kosher lahai is mali lahai. That which is good for this is not so good for that. A person needs to be balanced, except there are some magic foods, says the Gemara, except for bar miznagvila retiva, except for moist ginger, upilpolei arichta, and long peppercorns, upas nikia, and very fine bread, uvasar shamein, and fatty meat of this this female goat that never gave birth, the yayin yashan, and aged wine, demali l'chuligufe. That's good for every single part of your body. Question is, to what extent do we assume that all of this is still true? That if you eat these things, you know, there's a comment of the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, a psak of the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Yom Tov, in Hilchos Chol HaMoed, where the Ramah discusses whether you're allowed to make beer on Chol HaMoed. Meaning, let's say you have beer from before, so you could have made the beer, or you could have made the beer before. Is there anything wrong with using the beer that was made before Yontif? Why would you have to make beer on Yontif? So the Ramah writes, you can make beer on Chol HaMoed if the beer you're going to make on Chol HaMoed is a higher quality beer than that which you have from before. You'll have better beer because it will be fresher. So the Sefer Shmiras HaGuf VaNefesh says, let me just mute whoever, the Sefer Shmiras HaGuf VaNefesh writes that, Sefer Shmiras HaGuf VaNefesh says, wait a second, newer beer is going to be better? Our Gemara says newer beer is going to be worse. That new beer is not so healthy. Old beer is better. So he says, Elamai, you see from here that there's such a thing called Nishtana Hateva, that sometimes nature changes over the course of time. And that which was once healthy is now unhealthy. That which was once unhealthy is now healthy. You find it by other things as well. The Magen Avram writes in Simen Kufay in Tes, when the Shulchan Aruch comments that Achar Kol Achila, you have to eat melach, that after every meal you should have salt at the end of the meal. And that's the healthiest thing in the world. So Magen Avram says, not really. Not anymore. It's not the healthiest thing anymore. Maybe at one point it was very healthy. Different than the Ramah. The Ramah says the reason we don't have to do it anymore is because there's salt in our bread. So we're already covered with the salt that we have in our bread. But the Magen Avraham doesn't say that way. Magen Avraham says, nah, it's just not really healthy anymore. It used to be healthy. Magen Avraham is also the one that says that when it comes to the health problem of eating meat and fish together, that it's gorem tsaras or davarach, or whatever the Gemara says, that it's unhealthy. Magen Avraham says, nishtanu ativim, it's not unhealthy anymore. That we have the right to assume that if you don't see that it causes any unhealthy side effects, so you can assume that nishtanu ativim. Other achronim are not so convinced that you could just so easily say nishtanu ativim, and something that you don't necessarily know is not unhealthy, maybe you have to be choshesh, would be unhealthy if the Gemara identifies it as such. That's always a question. The medical advice of Chazal. So to what extent if we see that it's incorrect medical advice, so what's the approach? So some take the approach, what do you mean incorrect? You're not Bikoris. You can't say that it's incorrect. Others say, no, it was correct, but it's no longer correct. Nishtanu ativim. And then others say, it was the most cutting edge, top of the line medical advice for Bavel in that time. But nowadays, we have made some medical advancements, and we know a little bit more. And the medical advice of Chazal is therefore not to be followed, not because of Nishtana Teva, but because we have better medical advice nowadays. So Rav Shechter is fond of saying that, I don't know if he's fond of saying it, probably hurts him to say actually, but he says every once in a while that a sefer came out recently that said that anyone who believes that the medical advice of Chazal is incorrect, and that we know better in terms of medical science, is an apikoros. So Rav Shechter said, so I'm an apikoros, but so is the Chasam Sofer, and so is, and he gave a whole list of gedolim who are all apikorsim by this definition. Okay, different approaches that people have. Says Gemara Vayter, Sheikhar Amadi, if you have a Sheikhar Amadi, so what is Sheikhar Amadi? Deramu be mei sa'ari. They would put in barley water. V'chometz ha'adomi, and what is chometz ha'adomi? D'shadu be sa'ari, it was vinegar that they had to put barley in. So Amrav Nachman Yitzchak Bitchila Kshayim Avi Nesachim Mei Yehuda. Initially, when the Beis Hamikdash was around, they used to bring Nesachim from Yehuda. Lo Hayu Yenam Shel Yehuda Machmitz, because the wine of Yehuda was not Machmitz at all. It never became vinegar. It always remained good. It always remained wine. Ad Shenoslan Tochen Saorin. The only way to turn it to vinegar was not by letting it spoil. You had to spoil it. You had to put Saorin into it. That's how high quality this wine was. Vayukor Noso Chametz Tam. And when they would put Saorin into it and it would turn into vinegar, they just called that chometz. Va'achshav, ein yenam shaladomi machmitz, ashenos l'tochen sorin. Now that the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, we no longer have yayin shal nesachim, so now the Edomim have this advantage, that their wine doesn't turn sour. V'koronos on chometz adomi, until they put sorin in, and if they put sorin in, we call that chometz adomi. L'kayim mashenemar. And this interesting turn of the tables is fulfilled fulfillment of that which the Pasuk says in Yechezkel, Imala Hecharava, that Imaleazu Charevazu, Imaleazu Charevazu, that when Edom is doing well, Yehuda is not doing well. When Yehuda is doing well, Edom is not doing well. That it flips back and forth. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Mei Hachol, Lom Elom Yematz, that it's based on the Pasuk from Rivka when she wanted to know what was going on with her, and she was told, Shnei Goyim Bevitnech, Shnei Luhum, Imimayach Yipredu, Lom Elom Yematz, that when Esav, who's the Avi Edom, is a Gibor, Yaakov is going to be a Chalosh, Yaakov is going to be weak, and when Yaakov is a Gibor, then Esav is going to be weak. The Drosh HaSaran in Drush Beis explains the idea over here of Yaakov and Esav. Why isn't it Yishmael and the Bnei Yisrael? Why is it Dafka Yaakov and Esav that have this relationship? So in the Drosh HaSaran in Drush Beis, Drosh HaSaran is a very difficult sefer to understand. Drosh HaSaran happens to be, there's a ton of Kabbalah in Drosh HaSaran. It's very cryptic. He writes in very shorthand. Art Scroll, in one of the more impressive works that they've put out recently, has put out a Drosh HaSaran that explains it, Rachel, Bitcha, Katana, each phrase. It explains it, it gives you all the background information. There's a wonderful Yid from Lakewood that did all the work on it, Rabbi Kilson. He actually grew up here in the Five Towns in Lawrence, and he did an unbelievable job on the Drosh HaSaran. So anyway, in the Drosh HaSaran, he writes that it's because Esav and Yaakov have the same yichus, meaning by Yishmael and Yitzchak, Yishmael didn't have the same yichus as Yitzchak had. Yishmael did not come from Sarah. He came from Hagar, and therefore he didn't have the same yichus. It was understood that that you have to be chole kavod to the bnei hagvira, you know, to the primary wife rather than a secondary wife. But Esav has that power struggle with Yaakov. That's the up and the down. In fact, there's even a tshuva in one of the poskim that in Aruga Sabosem in Aruch Chaim Siman Lamed Gimel, he was asked about whether you could say a mishaberach for non-Jews together in the same mishaberach as Jews, and he suggested that first he goes through the issue of losichanim. Is it a violation of losichanim to say a mishaberach for a nachri? And he says, well, if you have a relationship with the nachri, then it's not losichanim. If you have what to benefit from the nachri, you have an ongoing relationship with the nachri, it's not losichanim, because that's the issue of losichanim. It's only when it's totally for free, when there's no relationship with the person. But then he says, but what about maybe it's a problem to daven for both of them together because it's a stira in a tefillah, to daven that the Yehudi and Eino Yehudi should both be successful. If the Eino Yehudi is from Edom, it's a stira within the tefillah. It's a little bit difficult to understand that. Lechora, this is not talking about on a personal level. This is talking on a national level. That nationally, when the Jewish people are successful, Edom is not successful, and vice versa. I don't know if you would apply it to individuals within the nation, but anyway, that's what the Tshuvas Arugas Habosim says. Says Maravaita. Now, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Yehuda Barishona, originally in Yehuda. Oh, also, just so interesting. What did the Gemara say over here? That in Yehuda they used to produce the most magnificent wine, and they would use that for Nesachim. And then after the Churban Abayis, it changed. Why did it change after the Churban Abayis? You know, if any of us were asked, we would see the wine that was being produced in Yehuda. We would say, oh, you know why they're using that wine for Nesachim? Because it's the best wine. Yehuda produces the best wine, and that's why we use it for Nesachim. But little did we know, and we only found out after the Churban Abayis, the wine stopped being good when there was no more Nesachim. It wasn't that we used it for Nesachim because it was the best wine. It was the best wine because we needed it for Nesachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Hatzlacha to that wine because there was a tzorech of using it for the Nesachim. And once there was no more Nesachim for the Mizbeach, so then there was no tzorech of having this delicious wine anymore. Says Gemara Vayta, now I realize I'm way over time over here. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Yehuda Barishon, originally in Yehuda, Lokei Chometz Mi'am Aretz, Eino Tzorech La'aser. If you buy vinegar from Mi'am Aretz, you don't have to take Maisos. M'Reisha Chazak, Eino Ba'al Min HaTemet, because you could assume it only came from Temet, from sediment of grapes that were mixed with water. V'achshav, Shalkei Chometz Mi'am Aretz, Tzorech La'aser, Shachas Chas Eino Ba'al Min HaYayin. But now, if you buy Chometz from Mi'am Aretz, you need to take Maisos, because you have to assume it was a wine product that produced it. V'sav Rabbi Yehuda, Temet Lav Barasuriyu. Wait a second, does Rabbi Yehuda hold that if you take water and mix it with grape products, you don't have to take Maisos? V'atnan, but doesn't the Mishnah Masechta Maisos tell us that a metamid v'nasan mayim b'mida, that if a person makes temed, and he puts in a certain measure of water, when he pulls out the water that now is flavored with the grape, it's the same measure of water, putter, you don't have to take maisos. But Rabbi Yehuda mechayev, Rabbi Yehuda says yechayev, so how can we say that Rabbi Yehuda holds you don't have to take maisos from temed? So hachi kamerlo, next to ameyaretz, ala temed. No, what he means to say is that ameyaretz, of course you have to take maisos from temed, but when you buy it from an ameyaretz, don't worry, temed is cheap. The reason ameyaretz don't take maisos is because it's expensive. They don't want to take maisos from expensive of things, but temet is so cheap you could trust them anyway. Ibay yisema nechshadun, or maybe no, the amayaritz are going to be chashad or not taking maisos. V'lokasha habed ravka habed deportzani, that if the temet is made from a wine sediment, then you have to take maisos because there's wine that's mixed in with it. Whereas if it's made from just the grape peels, then you don't have to take maisos. V'zesum amitzri. Then we said zesum amitzri was one of the items in the Mishnah. My zesum amitzri. What is zesum amitzri? Satana Rav Yosef tilta saari tilta. These are the ingredients: 1/3 sa'orim, 1/3 karkum, and 1/3 melach. Rav Papa mapik sa'ari umay lichiti, and Rav Papa, instead of sa'ari, he had chitim as the ingredient, as the first ingredient, not barley but wheat. The simanayich, and the way to remember who said what is the ingredient is sisni. Remember the word sisni, because then Rav Yosef with the samach says sa'orim, which is with the sin, but it sounds like a samach, so the two samachs go together, the two s sounds go together. So that's the way to remember. Then they would soak it and they would roast it, they would grind it, and it was a therapeutic drink that they would drink any time between Pesach and Shavuos. Whatever issues one is having with bowel movements, it will fix it. Meaning if one has bowels that are too loose, so it will fix that. If one has constipation, it will fix that. But if a person is ill or pregnant, then it's a danger to have such a thing. We then listed Zoman Shal Tzabayim as one of the items of Chametz Nuksha. Hachu Targimu Mayid Chivri Ditzavi Buliba, that it's a certain type of water with bran that is used for dyeing hides. V'amelon Shal Tabachim Pas Tavua Shloi V'yashlisha Menichal Kedera V'shoravis Hazuama, that it's bread made from grain that's not 1/3 grown, that they would use not to eat but just to draw out the impurities from food. V'kolon Shal Sofrim and Kolon Shal Sofrim. So what is that? Hachu Targuma. Perura du ushkafi, it's a glue that was used by shoemakers. Rav Simi mechuzna'a amar zetipulin shel benos hashirim, that it is a beauty product that is used by wealthy women. Shemeshayru soso lebenos aniyim, that after they use it, they then give it over to the benos aniyim. That's what Rashi says, that the benos hasofrim are called, are the benoseim of melamde tinokos. They are the benos aniyim. That's why we have the term sofrim over here, that the kolon shel sofrim, because they're the poor ones that get it afterwards. That's also, that's a Daf Yomi coincidence. That was today's parsha. The Rashi Achal can be Yaakov Afitzim be Yisrael by Shimon and Levi, is that they're going to be the Malamde Tinokos and the Sofrim, right, for Klal Yisrael. And what does that mean? That they're going to be spread all over the place. Why are Malamde Tinokos and Sofrim spread all over the place? Because they can't make a living. They're poor, so they have to go wherever they can to be able to make a living. So that's what the Gemara is telling us over here as well. So Eini says, Gemara, is that really so that Kulan Shel Sofrim is something that the Benos Hashirim would use as a beauty product? V'atani Rabbi Chiya Arba Amine Medina. On the list of the Mishnah, there are four things that are universally used by people in general, but V'shlosh Amine Umanus. There are three items in the list of our Mishnah that are meant for particular professions. But V'yamri Tipulun Shal Benos Hashirim Mai Mine Umnasika. So this last one, Kolon Shal Sofrim, is supposed to be on the list of items that are used by people in particular professions. But if it's a feminine beauty product, why is that? What does that have to do with the profession? It's got nothing to do with people in particular professions. Meaning, it's one thing if you're going to talk to me about the tzaba'im and the tabachim, you know, what they would use. But you're talking about every woman. So why is that something that's only for umnus? So what do you want to say? Perura du'ushkafi. So you want to say that it's for a shoemaker and that's an umnus? But then why would you call it kolon shel sofrim? Kolon shel ratzonim ibayalei. You should call it the kolon of shoemakers. So I'm Rav Hashayah. It really is a shoemaker's glue. But my curry, they call it shel sofrim. Why do we call it kolon shel sofrim? The sofrim nami medab can be an erosayan, because the sofrim also use it to attach the different parchments to each other. Okay, Ben Shem, we'll stop there and we'll pick up tomorrow at the two dots, two lines from the bottom of the page. I apologize for going longer than usual tonight. I didn't have a shachris to stop me. I didn't have people getting up and putting on their tefillin, so I apologize.